Milgram watched as Brown knelt beside a rack of clothing, feeling with gloved hands beneath the wheeled cast-iron base at one end. Milgram wanted to check the labels in the IF's clothes, some shirts and a black jacket, but he had to keep the light on Brown's hands. APC, maybe, he judged, squinting. He had seen the IF once, when he and Brown had been sitting in a magazine and sandwich place on Broadway. The IF had walked past, beyond the steamed window, and had actually looked in. Brown, taken by surprise, had lost it, hissing codes into his headset, and Milgram hadn't understood, at first, that this mild-looking little guy with the black leather pork pie turned up at the front was Brown's IF. He looked, Milgram thought, like an ethnic version of a younger Johnny Depp. Brown had once referred to the IF and his family as Cuban Chinese, but Milgram would have been unable to make an ethnic identification. Filipino, in a pinch. But that wasn't it either. And they spoke Russian, or texted in an approximation of it. As far as Milgram knew, Brown's people had never intercepted any voice. These people of Brown's, they worried Milgram. Many things worried Milgram, not the least of them Brown, but he had a special mental folder for Brown's unseen people. There seemed to be too many of them, for one thing. Was Brown a cop? Were whoever did this text-tapping thing for him cops? Milgram doubted it. Brown's people had Fed written all over their M.O., it seemed to Milgram. But if that were the case, what did that make Brown? Brown, as if in answer to this unvoiced query, made a soft, worryingly satisfied grunting sound from where he knelt on the floor. Milgram watched the green-gloved hand creatures reemerge into their limelight, bearing something matte, black, and partially covered in equally matte and black tape. It had a 6-inch rat tail of matte black wire with its own bit of tape, and Milgram guessed that it might be using this old garment district rack as additional antenna. He watched Brown swap in the fresh battery, careful to keep the beam on what Brown was doing and out of his eyes. Was Brown a Fed of some kind? FBI? DEA? Milgram had encountered examples of both, enough to know them as very different and mutually antagonistic species. He couldn't imagine Brown as either. These days, though, there must be Feds in flavors Milgram had never even heard of. But something about Brown's apparent IQ, not terribly high, as Milgram judged it, and the degree of autonomy he seemed to be manifesting in this operation, whatever it might be, kept niggling at him, right through the hard-bought perspective of the Ataban he needed just to keep standing here without screaming. He watched Brown replace the bug beneath the rusty base of the old rack, head down, intent on his task. When Brown stood up, Milgram saw him knock something dark from the crossbar of the rack. It made no sound when it hit the floor. As Brown took the flashlight and turned, playing it once more over the IF's belongings, Milgram reached out and touched a second dark thing that still hung there. Cold, wet wool. Brown's flashlight's uncomfortable brilliance found a cheap-looking little vase made of something nacreous and blue that stood beside one of the speakers for the IF's sound system. The amped-up blue-white diode light lent the vessel's lacquered surface an unreal translucence, as though some process akin to fusion were beginning within it. When the light went out, it was as though Milgram could still see the vase. "Out of here," Brown announced. On the sidewalk outside, walking briskly toward Lafayette, Milgram decided that Stockholm Syndrome was a myth. Going on a few weeks now, and he still wasn't empathizing with Brown. Not even a little bit.